99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. Stay tuned for Back of the Book that comes your way right now.
And says, you should be ashamed. But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I think it's very near 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. 80 years ago, a very big fight was still going on. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear. And a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we'll talk about various things in this program. And you can find out a little bit more about what we talk about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. Click on that, and you will get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. We do a webpage for every radio program, so there are quite a few of them up there. The WBAI website and archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 178th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the local galaxy group for the past week is: on Twitter, we are still holding at the huge total of 124 followers on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it now. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, June 12, 2024 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. This one could be an interesting meeting. You might want to tune into it and see what's going on with it. You can go up to kpftx.org and look it up. It's going to be June 12th at 7 p.m. And look that date up on kpftx.org and you will be able to tune in to that meeting if you want. Could be interesting. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a website, and that CDC website is no longer tracking the cumulative death toll in America from COVID-19. What their website says at this time is that there has once again been no change in the death rate from COVID-19 over the past week. This has been happening for at least three consecutive weeks now of no change. The last time we got a real number from the CDC, they said that just under 300 people have died of COVID-19 in that particular week. From what I've read, the virus is still infecting people and there are even new variants showing up. Now, maybe we're coming out of the pandemic, or maybe it's just that the weather is slowing the spread of the virus down a lot. Pickles of the North and I are not wearing our masks as much at this point, but we are still planning on getting our spring booster shots soon. This past Thursday was the 80th anniversary of the beginning of Operation Overlord. That was the invasion of Normandy by the Allies, and they were going after Festung Europa, as Hitler called it, Fortress Europe. And it pretty much was. He had something that was referred to generally as the Atlantic Wall. And it was a very formidable set of fortresses all along the coast of France. And, yeah, on D-Day, January 6th, 1944, the invasion began. Pickles of the North has a bit of a connection to that through a relative of hers.
Yes, I do, Art Ball. Mainly, this was someone that my mom grew up with. When my mom was a kid back in the 1930s, she had four cousins who were brothers who were all born on their parents' farm in rural Quebec. By 1940, three of the brothers had enlisted to fight in World War II. Her cousins Joe and Tony joined the Canadian Armed Forces, and her cousin Frankie, who was Joe and Tony's youngest brother, signed up for the Royal Canadian Air Force. He had learned stenography in commercial school, which I think is a kind of a technical school where you learn office work instead of, you know, stuff to do with machinery and such, and he had worked as a clerk in a local school. So the RCAF, the Royal Canadian Air Force, signed him up as a clerk. He worked really hard. He knew how to get along with people. He was a smart guy. He also was very good looking. And he didn't have a lot of schooling, but he was smart, as I said, and knew how to apply himself. He ended up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. For those of you who don't know, that is a western province. Lots of wide open spaces there. And after being a clerk, being a very successful clerk, he decided he wanted to fly. So he remustered. Is that the correct word, Arpal?
I have no idea what the Canadian military calls it.
Well, he remustered into an air crew, and he learned how to pilot a plane. He learned how to shoot guns from the turret. Is that the correct expression?
That's one of the several things you could do, shooting guns,
Yeah, that was part of gunnery, I guess. You learned how to drop bombs on a target, all that stuff that you need to do in a war. But in the off hours, he studied navigation, and they were very impressed by this. And he ended up being promoted to the rank of officer, which I guess they call flying officer, and a navigator. So that was what he wanted to do. He really wanted to pilot, but navigator was good. He was happy with navigator. In March 1943, he is in England and joins the Royal Air Force training pool. And while he's there, and his brothers are also there in Europe, his dad passes away. In January 31st, 1944, he is posted to the 299th Squadron and undergoes more training. And then the paper trail kind of dries up because I guess they didn't want to put down, even now in these files that have been liberated, what mission he was training for. But he was training for Operation Overlord.
Yeah, it makes sense that they would. They didn't write it down then, and then after that, what are they going to do? Start filling out forms in retrospect? No, that's what happens in these kinds of things. Nobody makes a record of some part of it because it's secret, and it was necessary that it be secret. And then later on, you just start making records again, but you can't go back. I mean, what hasn't been recorded can't be re-recorded. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin.
Of course, there is one piece of paper that has a lot of information about what Frankie was doing on June 6th, 1944. And R. Paul, would you tell us about the document that concerns what Frankie was doing on June 6th, 1944?
Yeah, your cousin, place or two removed, was Royal Canadian Air Force Flying Officer Francis A. Boyce. And Flying Officer Boyce was part of, as you said, the 299th Squadron of number 38 Group RAF. RAF is Royal Air Force. Those are the guys in Great Britain who were fighting the Nazis. He was the navigator in a short Stirling heavy bomber that was used as a tug for gliders. The short Stirling. Stirling is the name of the aircraft. Short is the company that made it. They did things like this. This is like the Douglas Paul Defiant. Defiant is the name of an aircraft. Douglas Paul is the people who put it together. And then you have the Ferry Company, which had its name on a whole bunch of aircraft. So they had a lot of one of the most famous aircraft from that company was called the Ferry String Bag. It was a biplane, and they were the planes that were used to stop the Bismarck because they couldn't sink it. They were unable to sink it, but they jammed its rudder with a torpedo. And it started going in circles, and that allowed the British Navy to converge on it. So they have these naming conventions in Great Britain, and that's how that worked. It was a Stirling 4, a heavy bomber. And Stirling bomber wasn't that good. It was used because early in the war, they had to use every aircraft they could get their hands on, and the Stirling didn't have a high ceiling. It couldn't go all that high. Therefore, it was very vulnerable to both anti-aircraft coming up from the ground, anti-aircraft fire coming from the ground, and from things like Messerschmitt's BF-109s diving on them from above. And they can get pretty high above them and dive on them. And that was the major way to attack bombers. And so they weren't so good for bombing anymore. They were put into a second-class sort of bombing mission thing. But they were good enough to tug gliders. And the British had a very big glider program, which America eventually also had one. And what they did was they hooked up a glider to a regular propeller plane, like a bomber, and the bomber would take off, and it would tow it. There was a tow rope. And the bomber would take off with the glider in back of it, and the glider pilot would, you know, deal with his flaps and everything, and his ailerons, and he would be drawn up into the sky. And they would fly along, and they would get to a point of where it was time to release the gliders, and the people in the Stirling would push buttons or pull levers, whatever they did in those days, and it would let go of the tow rope. And the tow rope would fall away, and now the glider is on its own, and it's actually gliding. So that's what they did. And Operation Mallard was a way of getting as many troops as possible into a specific area as quickly as possible. And so for this, they used the gliders. Earlier on D-Day, they had been using paratroopers, and the paratroopers you couldn't drop as many guys together, and they had to organize themselves once they got on the ground. They were also very vulnerable to being jumped by a handful of people, because you get one guy coming down and there are three or four guys there, they're going to shoot him. And they're also vulnerable to things like getting hung up in a tree with a parachute. And so gliders are for getting the most people into the battle as quickly as possible with equipment. When you have the people who are paratroopers, they drop, and you can drop their some equipment, a little bit of equipment with them, but then they got to go and find it, because, you know, dropping stuff by parachute is not that precise. And the wind comes along, a gust of wind nobody knows about comes along, and it can blow your people or your equipment miles away. And it is not at all unusual for entire groups of paratroopers to get spread all over the landscape because of a little breeze that only shows up at about 100 feet off the ground, because the air isn't a homogeneous thing. You got a little breeze going this way at 1,000 feet. You got a heavier breeze at 800 feet going in another direction. You know, so at the whatever happens at the last minute is very important for parachutists. With a glider, it weighs more. It's controllable. The glider pilot has a lot more control over where the hell the glider is going to land than the individual in a parachute, and certainly more than a piece of equipment that's just coming down in parachutes and has no control whatsoever over that. And so the gliders were used to drop a whole bunch of folks in. So what they were towing in those days, in this particular operation, were Horsa gliders, H-O-R-S-A. And that was a company that made them. And their job of the 299th Squadron was to get the 6th Air Landing Brigade behind enemy lines in the right place. And the air landing brigade was what they called the people in the gliders, as opposed to paratroopers or paratroops. And, you know, so these sort of subtle differences, but it's a big difference if they're trying to plan things. So the 6th Air Landing Brigade, which they landed, its goal was to take control of a pair of bridges, one over the Cannes Canal and the other over the Orne River. Yeah, Cannes was an interesting, not C-A-N-N-E-S, where they show movies these days. Cannes, which I'm not pronouncing right, C-A-E-N, that was a canal from the 19th century in France. And the military goal was to take control of a pair of bridges over that canal and over the river. So that was the idea. There was to prevent the Germans from getting reinforcements into Normandy, because, as I said, the gliders are coming in behind the enemy lines. And the other thing about gliders is you could put more people in one spot, and they're more likely able to survive behind enemy lines because they can fight better and fight their way to a goal. And so they get a force of gliders in there with these air landing brigade guys in there. And not only do they have people there, but they can have other equipment with them. They can land jeeps and trailers that hitch up to the jeeps that have a lot of equipment on them. And, you know, once they land, they just break out the front of the glider. That's the way they did it. Some of the gliders just, you know, sort of came apart in the middle. Some gliders, the front of it just, you know, was pushed up like the hood of a car. And just whoop, and it was on a hinge, and bang, guys came pouring out. A jeep would drive out with a trailer in back of it. In some cases, in the larger gliders, they actually had a type of tank called a tetrarch. It was the name of the tank. And it was a, you know, small, light tank, but if you're in an infantry fight and one side has even a small tank, oh boy, you're having a problem if the other guy has even a small tank. So they were able to drop serious forces in just the right place. I mean, they weren't trying to take over the entire line. They were there to take control of these bridges. And the idea was to control them until the Allies could come up and use them. Or if they couldn't control them, blow the bridges. And that would keep the, especially the German panzer divisions, and there were some. Oh, there were some. There was an SS panzer divisions farther back from the front. And Hitler wouldn't release them. Hitler wouldn't release them because he was convinced that the entire blow was going to be landed at Calais, because it was closer and disinformation was handed out. And also the Allies, they had to bomb a lot of stuff around Normandy, because you don't just walk in and let the enemy have all of his stuff to shoot at you with. So they had extensive bombing at Normandy, but they made absolutely certain that they had twice the amount of bombardment going on at targets in the Calais area. So this helped to reinforce stupid Hitler's preconceived notion that it was going to be at Calais. And so he would not release the SS panzer divisions, plural, because he said, oh no, this is a feint. This thing attacking over on Normandy, that's a feint. The real blow is coming up at Calais. This is to get me to move my panzer divisions there over to Normandy. And then once I move them, bang, they're going to hit Calais. And that really worked. It was so important that he did that. And they got him to do it by faking his stupid ass out. Yeah, you know, corporals aren't generals. And generals a lot of the time aren't generals. But most of the time, they're not corporals either. In any event, so that was a part of the whole thing. And, of course, it was also what we have since heard and learned about, a big radio broadcast, a recording made by Supreme Allied Commander Dwight Eisenhower. And so it was, we have failed. We went up to the beaches. We made a good effort, and we have failed. We have been thrown back into the sea and with a lot of casualties, but we'll keep trying. So he had two radio messages pre-recorded. One of them was, we have landed, we got a foothold, we're pushing in, we're not going back, and now we're marching on to defeat the Axis. And the other was, sorry, folks, we just had a whole lot of people killed in a botched operation. And if Hitler had let the SS panzer divisions go, that probably would have been the one that got played. But luckily, that didn't happen. Anyway, so they were air landing brigade was there, and they went in to hold on to those bridges. And I've heard it pronounced. I can't do French pronunciation. I have to hold my nose and I can make a pronunciation, I guess. In any event, the fighting around that place was so fierce that they destroyed the whole city. I mean, the whole city of Caen was wiped out because both sides were converging on it and shooting at each other and shelling it and bombing it. And the troops were in the rubble. They were fighting from one rubble pile to the next. And it took like a month or more before they could get through it. Very difficult to do. Anyway, Caen ended up being destroyed, but Flying Officer Francis A. Boyce, he was in there right at the very beginning, bringing in those British troops.
Yes, he was, and it was extremely dangerous, and we know just how dangerous it was. And he knew how dangerous it was, too. Before he signed up, he was asked by his family, well, what are you going to do after the war? And this is something that actually is written in some of the papers that I was looking at. And his mom said, well, he said to us, if I come back, I might go out west. And that's all he said.
Yeah. And when you're going into a war, you look at it that way.
Well, yes, you would know that better than I. And Cousin Frankie knew it too. And he was there with his crew, part of his crew, flying the gliders in. And they were successful. I don't know how many times they were flying gliders back and forth.
Yeah, I couldn't find much about that. But Operation Mallard began at like 7 o'clock in the evening on D-Day. But they had been flying gliders in all day because they were dropping all over the place. I mean, the British weren't doing it. The Americans were dropping the airborne Rangers on the right flank of the battlefield, and they had to try and get up the heights to fight the Germans on the heights because the Germans had a really commanding view with their artillery of the beaches, and the Rangers fought their way up there and stopped the Germans. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org.
Well, there is one document that describes what happened.
Yeah, there's a document that we have here, and I'm going to post this on the website. And it's a report. I guess this is like an after-action report or what the hell happened. And it lists a number of things. I suspect this document was done on a Rexograph because it's a pale blue type on what was then white paper. And the top of it just says P.418133. This is typical of the military with stuff like that written on everything. And it has a number of different things on it, and they're numbered. 1, type and number of aircraft, Sterling Mark IV, LJ-885. The LJ-885 would be the serial number of the aircraft. 2, date of incident, 6th June, 1944. 3, name of captain and members of crew. And it gives their serial numbers. And I guess the pilot was Flying Officer J.H. Clark. And then it names Flying Officer F.A. Boyce, who is your relative.
Yes, and he was the navigator.
He would be the navigator. And then it names 4 other men in this crew. It was a 6-man crew. 4 members of crew injured and extent of injury. And it's written, all missing. Then it gets to 5, type of operation and name of, if any. And it says, glider operation Mallard. 6, time of takeoff, 19:10. That's 10 minutes after 7 o'clock in the evening. 7, brief description of flight as far as known up till time of loss or return to base. And it goes through, you know, from where they took off and they went over to French coast to the landing zone near Caen. Release height, 1,000 feet, and that's where they let the cable go and release the gliders. Drop container and tow rope. Turn and head out to sea, flying 200 feet. So now they drop down to 200 feet and they're flying. Return to English coast, cross at 3,000 feet, and then to their home base. an aircraft was seen to crash into the sea soon after leaving the French coast and exploded. This aircraft was a Stirling, and it is assumed this aircraft was piloted by Flying Officer Clark and crew. 8. Brief description of damage to aircraft, not known. And it's signed off by a flight lieutenant adjutant for the wing commander for number 299 Squadron, Royal Air Force.
So Cousin Frankie did not live to see his 25th birthday. And I'm going to read you a couple of letters that were sent to his mom by the RAF. Of course, the family would have received a telegram. We haven't found that in the paperwork, but we have found a couple of letters. Officer commanding number 299 Squadron, Royal Air Force Station, Keyville, Trowbridge, Wiltshire, 21st June 1944. My dear Mrs. Boyce, since writing to you on 13th June, we have been notified that Francis's body was picked up in the English Channel, and he was buried at sea on 8th June 1944. It is with much sorrow that I write to tell you this, but it is what I feared. Please accept my sympathy and that of all my squadron in your loss. Yours sincerely, Wing Commander Davis. And he writes a longer letter a few weeks later. 7th July 1944. Dear Mrs. Boyce, before you receive this letter, you will have had a telegram informing you that your son, Flying Officer Francis Allen Boyce, has been reported killed as a result of air operations against the enemy. It is with regret that I write to you to convey to Francis's family the feeling of my entire squadron. On the evening of the 7th June 1944, Francis and his crew took off from the aerodrome together with other aircraft on an important operation. Unfortunately, Francis's aircraft did not return, and at first he was reported missing. It was thought that his aircraft was hit on the way back, after having completed their task in a most successful manner and crashed into the sea. This has now been confirmed, as his body was picked up at sea by an air-sea rescue launch on the 8th June, 1944, and he was buried at sea on the same day. This information was received on the 17th June, 1944, and an amended signal was dispatched reporting Francis as killed. Your son and his crew were most popular in the squadron and consisted of three other Canadians, one Australian, and an Englishman. And we all felt we have lost one of our best crews. Francis's effects are being gathered together and will be held at the RAF Central Depository, and later will be forwarded to you through the Administration of Estates, Ottawa. May I express the great sympathy which all of us feel in your loss, and I should like to assure you how greatly we all admire the unselfish spirit which your son showed in coming so far from home in the cause of the British Empire and for the cause of common decency amongst mankind. Yours sincerely, Wing Commander Davis. So at first, you know, they got news that he was missing, and then a few days later, they found out that he had been killed, and They found his body first, and then they found on the 19th of June, they found another crew member's body. Later on, a few years later, they found that two of the crew members had been picked up and buried in separate cemeteries in France. And the captain, his body was never found.
Well, yeah, I guess... Well, we don't know what exactly happened to it, but if an aircraft had gotten to it, and it was also the anti-aircraft from the ground, it could have been hit, and there could have been people on the plane hit. And you know, you get hit by a 20-millimeter shell, it isn't like a bullet hole in it. It blows you up. And then they crashed into the sea and it exploded. And probably it was, you know, they figured the thing to do is bury at sea because the body is not in a condition where anybody wants to view him or anything.
It's, I know.
Not that way. So they buried him at sea. And I will say this. Apparently, they accomplished their mission.
Yes, they did. I don't know how much comfort that was to his mom, but it's something.
Yeah.
I mean, he wanted to do this. My mom told me that his brother, Tony, told her that after that, I mean, he had been in the war. He was fighting. He actually married a woman from Scotland while he was overseas, and she's the one that they sent Frankie's bicycle to. Because, you know, he had just bought a bicycle while he was in England, and it was a gent's bicycle. That's what they called it, a Sun Roadster. So they sent it to Frankie's sister-in-law. But Tony said that he had been fighting, but after that, he absolutely just hated the Germans.
And you knew Tony?
Yes, I did. I did, and I never knew anything about this. I don't think I was ever told that he was a veteran. I guess it's something families sometimes did not talk about. If the person who had been there didn't want to talk about it, then, you know, that. But I'm glad that my mom has told me all this stuff now. And, yeah, and that's our family connection to D-Day 80 years ago.
In the news more recently regarding another war in Europe, the Biden administration has decided to allow Ukraine to strike military targets inside Russia. And this is not, you know, they can start bombing everybody and everything. This allows them to do what's called a counter battery. When there's a bunch of missile launchers launching missiles into your city and blowing it up, and you fire your rockets at them and blow them up, that's called counter battery. It's, you know, back and forth between artillery groups. And so he's allowing that, and they apparently did this, and they can fire up to 200 miles into Russia. And I think they've done one already where they blew up one bunch of missile launchers who figured, we can shoot them all day long. They're not allowed to hit us. Let's shoot at them. Well, they got nailed. And so that's a good thing. That's a good thing because, you know, too much is being given to Russia in this case. And I want to see Russia lose this big. I want to see the Ukrainians take back the rest of their country and kick the Russians out. Meanwhile, Putin is talking about how Russia's nuclear arsenal is so powerful that it would wipe out everyone else because Russia's nuclear arsenal is so much bigger than all of the Western nuclear-armed nations put together. Which, you know, sort of does ignore the fact that if it comes down to that of using the entire arsenals, there isn't going to be much of anything left. You know, this is how this guy thinks. Yeah, we can do this. He's so used to bullying everybody that he doesn't even think of what he's really saying. I mean, the world would be so devastated. I mean, it's a nice world he wants to live in, except I think he wouldn't live long in it. I think there are, you know, multi-megatons that would be aimed at him, and probably they'd get him. I mean, they know where his mansion is on a river, this gigantic castle he lives in, and they know where Moscow is. And so, yeah, on the other hand, cities like Moscow and all of that, they're built up much better than any American city because they have, in terms of survivability of a nuclear war, because they have these deep subways that go down really far, and they could put the entire population into those deep subways, and it's very hard to get them. On the other hand, what are they going to come up to? Yeah, it's not going to be so easy after you know, you come up and everything's radioactive. And what are you going to eat? What's the population going to eat? Well, all of that stuff's either burned up or highly radioactive. I've read enough stories, you know, science fiction stories about the post-apocalypse to know that this is going to be very, very bad. But I am glad that Putin isn't being allowed to take over the world. This is the mistake in 1938 of allowing Germany, the Third Reich, to take over the Sudetenland from Czechoslovakia directly ended up requiring that D-Day happen. So, yeah, you stand up to them. You don't oppose these kinds of people.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Oh, we know what that means. We know what we're doing. Oh, here it comes. The BAI pitching train is chugging along the tracks. Yes, and we hear the sounds of the pitching hobos playing their harmonicas. And I think that's us. We are the pitching hobos. Oh. And so, we're going to pitch. This is WBAI New York, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio. And we are non-commercial, and we still have to pay bills. So, we are listener-sponsored. That means we rely on you, the listener, to keep us going, to keep us on the air. And on the last program, we were talking about the pledge line going away because, you know, we talked about the call center suspending its service to WBAI due to non-payment of bills, which is perfectly logical. We owed them a pile of money. We still owe them a pile of money. And instead of being really mean to us, they worked with us as much as possible, but we haven't been able to raise enough money to pay the bill, so they're not answering the phone anymore. But they are doing something else. What's happened here is an illustration of what we refer to at the start of the program of things happening after we record the program on Friday evening, because I think it was late last Friday or sometime early on Saturday, management reached an agreement with the call center. Again, they're not angry at us. They're not, you know, belligerent. Well, they are suing us in Utah, but that's just to get money. We owe them the money. It's real. So management made a deal. And you can once again call 1-212-209-2950 to pledge. What's happening now is the call center is rerouting the calls to a phone number based at WBAI. I don't know who, if anyone, will answer the phone at the station. So I don't know if anybody's there at what is this at this point in time, like 5:45 in the morning. I don't know. I don't know if anybody's there at the radio station taking calls at this time. And obviously we can't just let anybody walk in and take these calls. So it's not a giant number of people. But I am told by management that people are doing this. 1-212-209-2950. Now, some of you may call there and get no answer. Nothing happens. Well, in that case, you need to go to WBAI.org. That's the website for WBAI. And when you get to WBAI.org, look for an image of a dove with the words, BAI Buddy, Become a Sustaining Member, under it. And click on that image there, and that will bring you to a web page where you can become a BAI Buddy or just make a donation. And so it'll have, you know, all sorts of stuff for you to fill out there. But please, you must remember to click on the selection, the drop-down selection. It says, select your favorite show. And please choose Back of the Book from that drop-down list. That way we get credit for a listener. And it is important, very important, that we show that we do have listeners and listeners who care enough to fund the radio station. Otherwise, you know, we may be gone. Management has already said, they sent out an email a couple of months ago saying they're going to give everybody up through June to see if we could raise enough money. And those shows that cannot raise enough money are gone or going to be gone. And so I think that's going to happen. And I'm not sure what we've raised here. Management said they were going to put out these numbers so we would see them, you know, at least every month. I have to look at that email, see how often they said they were going to do this. In any event, we do not have anything yet that says how much we have raised. I know we've raised something, but I don't know how much. 1-212-209-2950 is a number for you to call right now, or go to WBAI.org and click on that dove that's underneath the programs. When you go to WBAI.org, you see these, you scroll down from the very top, and you'll see a thing that says upcoming programs, and then it has little squares and usually with some kind of a graphic in it, including our graphic if you're there before we go down before 6 o'clock, and you'll see the upcoming programs. It says when the programs are on. Underneath that there is a little graphic, and it's a green background, and it has a black dove on it. That's supposed to be a dove, it's a bird. And it says BAI Buddy, become a sustaining member. Click on that. You click on that, and you answer some questions, and you say who you are and give your credit card information. This goes to, by the way, a site that is set up for this. It's not a BAI site. It's a site that specializes in collecting that kind of information for clients, and BAI is a client. I think maybe Ola Pacific is a client. I'm not sure. Anyway. So you go in there and you click on the stuff, but you got to remember to click on the drop down that says select your favorite show and make sure you click on back of the book. We're toward the top. 1-212-209-2950 or WBAI.org. Please go to one of those and say, yeah, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of back of the book. A BAI buddy is a name we have for a sustaining membership. If you're a BAI buddy, you agree to donate to WBAI on a monthly basis. And the way that happens is when you get a hold of whomever you're getting a hold of, either on the phone or by the website, you say, you give them the credit card information. You say what day of the month you want to be charged, and you say how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. It could be $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month or more, and you can donate that way. And that way, management gets to know how much money's coming in, because the old way of not knowing what the hell how much money's going to come in at all was a real problem. We still have real problems, but that was a different problem and it was really bad. But now we have an idea of how much we're going to get per month, and that's because of BAI Buddies. If you want to do a one-time donation, same place, either 212-209-2950 or WBAI.org, and you go through all that stuff, clicking on everything. And that's how we got to do it there, folks. 1-212-209-2950. If you could please, please give them a call at that number or go to WBAI.org and click on the graphic that says BAI Buddy, become a sustaining member. And, you know, if you've listened to this program, I mean, this time we were thinking of maybe we'd do some science stuff. We didn't get to it. We've done science at other times. This time was a personal connection to a big event that happened 80 years ago. And you're not going to get this kind of thing from most places. You saw a lot of well-produced TV programs about D-Day and all of that. Well, here you've got somebody from BAI, somebody you may have been listening to for years on the radio, talking about her cousin, and she hadn't even known that all of this had gone on. And, you know, now she's looked it up, and you've heard some very personal stuff here. And we also do other kinds of programs, and we don't necessarily go with what other people at BAI say about some of these things. We're a different program. We're so different, we're even different on BAI. 1-212-209-2950 or WBAI.org. Please, please call the number or go to WBAI.org and pledge. One of the things we'll point out again is, as I've noted, we couldn't pay the bills and we need the money. And so one thing that's been proposed is to wipe out the overnight programming, and from midnight to 6 a.m., WBAI would be rented out to I don't know who the hell. And they would, you know, basically have a radio station at their disposal for 6 hours an overnight, 7 days a week. And that would be something that some people would find attractive, and they'd pay for it. And this is a proposal that has been actively brought up for 2 or 3 years at least. I haven't heard of anybody saying, yeah, we're going to do this, but it's a proposal. And the rest of Pacifica can't bail us out at this point in time because most of Pacifica is having money trouble. The other option is they could just say, hey, we're going to sell BAI's signal. And then you wouldn't have not only not the overnights anymore, you wouldn't have any BAI at all. Because the rest of Pacific could say, hey, we'll sell WBAI's license for millions of dollars, and then we don't have any problems anymore. Of course, New York won't have BAI anymore, but, you know, other people at other stations don't care about that, especially certain West Coast stations. 1-212-209-2950. Please help save WBAI. Keep us on the air. We need to hear from you. Or go to WBAI.org. If you care about the overnights, some of the overnights don't really pitch much. We do. By donating to BAI through Back of the Book, you tell management that we have listeners, and that the overnights have listeners. 1-212-209-2950 or WBAI.org. Please call or go to that site and donate. We need it, and we'll thank you if you do. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again with Mr. David Kenny.
David Kenny again. And it's June, it's late spring, it's nice, it's LGBT plus infinity pride month. Enjoy it. Go out and enjoy it if you can. If you can't get out, like some of us, just look out the window and enjoy the look of late spring. It's so nice out there on some days. All right. So we're hoping we're back here next week. Take care of yourselves, and above all, remember what that very glad our guys won that war Dormouse said.
Winding your way down on Baker Street, light in your head and so cold, it's got
Saturday, June 8th at noon, people are gathering from around the country to surround the White House, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, an end to the siege, freedom of all Palestinian prisoners, and an end to the occupation of Palestine. June 8th marks 8 months of U.S.-Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people and 54 years since the occupation of Gaza. A month ago, President Biden said that the invasion of Rafah was a red line, but now the invasion of Rafah has continued for weeks and has expanded to the entire Gaza Strip. The June 8th rally will create a people's red line around the White House. That's June 8th, noon, at the White House. More information is at shutitdownforpalestine.org. That's shutitdown, the number 4, palestine.org. Que viva Palestina libre.
Hello, I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to you stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
WBAI's local station board is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, June 12th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. It is accessible to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org or on the WBAI website. You can also gain access by calling 929-205-6099. That number again, 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, 922-457-2995. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 995-995-99. You have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we certainly, certainly hope that you do, and tell your friends and colleagues about WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
For me, oh death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
McDonough John and McCourt Malachy are on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, on Sundays from 11 a.m. Topics, wit, wisdom, wackery, sausages. Join us, please!
But not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Do you love WBAI? Now is your chance to get involved by participating in the local station board. Run for a seat on the board by becoming a candidate between June 1st and June 30th. Complete your candidate package located on elections.pacifica.org. Call 707-500.